Tango Tango Papa 2112, May 2nd, 2022.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from home. So, I've been home a few days. Actually, I go back to work on Wednesday. Today is Monday. So, I have one more day at home and then back to the grindstone. So, but, you know, I don't know. Of course, I could retire if I wanted to, but, you know, there's several things that are kind of holding me back. I really believe that I need to continue working, you know, because, let's face it, work provides meaning. I know a lot of people resist that idea, but, you know, I'm sorry, but it really is true. I think, you know, now I'm not saying that that's the only place you can find meaning, but that is one of the main places where people do find meaning. So that's one thing. Another thing is, you know, what about, you know, I could do some sort of a part-time job or, you know, that would really, it would have to revolve around change of lifestyle, because there would be no point in doing another full-time job that I might or might not like or might not be any different than the job that I have. The job that I have is, you know, it's probably, yeah, I'm not going to say it's the best possible job in the world with the most pay, or for the, you know, it's, but it's probably one of the better driving jobs. It's probably, you know, it's, who's to say whether it's the top job or not? Probably isn't. There's usually always something better, but I'd say it's right up there. And I think at this point I'd be hard pressed to find something different, you know, or better. I could maybe find something, you know, the chances are I could find something that would be worse. And so, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The other thing that sort of gives me pause is all of this inflation that seems to be happening. And, I think there's probably a good chance, you know, well, the supply chain thing is keeps, you know, rearing its ugly little head with shortages and what have you. And that ends up turning into inflated prices. And there's lots of inflation going on right now. And it's probably, you know, the governments have spent, you know, printed all kinds of extra money, as well as you've got these shortages that are going on, and of course the price going up helps regulate supply, because if the price goes up too high, then, you know, in theory, usually people, you know, they can't buy it anymore. They'll if it's not an absolute necessity, then they may postpone whatever the, you know, their buying choice. But that really is the best way of just allowing the price to float. That really is the best way of sort of regulating the demand. But in any case, the prices are going up. So, you know, and then I have this other problem, and it's really my problem. I like to spend money. And, you know, that's just, what do you do? So could I get, if I had to really rein in the spending and cut the spending off, could I do that? Yeah, I bet I could. But do I voluntarily want to do it? Not really. There would have to be some sort of a demonstrable benefit to doing it. And, you know, most of the time I like my job. You know, it's there. It has its moments that I don't particularly care for it, but most of the time I do enjoy it. And I think as long as I'm physically capable of doing it and I enjoy it, then it kind of makes sense to, you know, to continue with it. So, you know, at least for the time being. So that's what I'm doing. So we'll see, you know, kind of see what happens. But, you know, in the meantime, I, like I say, I'm physically capable of doing it. And, you know, the job really has, it, you know, it hasn't become any more difficult than it already was. And they certainly seem to be keeping me busy enough. So unless something with the job changes, and or something with me changes, some factor with me and or the job, then all things being the same, you know, I should just kind of keep on keeping on. So, you know, that's my current thinking. So anyway, if you're torturing yourself by watching the video, I'm actually recording this video as well as an audio podcast. Split the audio off. You're watching in the background, you're watching an image of my fireplace. I ended up, and I don't know if I talked about this before or not, but I had ordered some so-called electric fireplace logs from a it's this website. It's usfireplacestore.com is the website. And they have different, you know, initially I was looking for inserts, you know, like an electric log or electric fireplace type insert that would kind of give you the same effect. But then I discovered they had these so-called electric logs. And the electric logs are pretty interesting because they, you know, they're not, you know, they just kind of sit in the, you know, and that's actually a real fireplace, you know, you know, and I used it initially years ago when I got the house. I used the fireplace like three times. And then I just, you know, I kind of never used it anymore. I sort of decided that it was kind of redundant. What was the point? I have central heating and air, so there was really, you know, and it's more of a visual thing than anything else, you know. So it's fireplace, a real fireplace is a messy thing, you know, because you end up with lots of ashes you got to keep cleaning out, and then eventually you got to clean the flue out, or you're going to end up with a flue fire, and it, blah blah blah, and so it is a, you know, and it can be kind of stinky at times. So I just never did, you know, I used it those three times initially, and then I just never did use it again. And so there were some old logs in there that were in there for 22 or 23 years. And so I, you know, I got this, it's these so-called electric logs. So I took the old logs out, the ones that had been in there. They're about the same age as, if you're looking at the image in the lower left corner of the image, there's a kind of a little metal basket type thing that's got some logs in it. And those are actually real pieces of wood, and they're about the same age. They're about 20, probably 25 years old. They were cut 25 years ago. And so those are just kind of decorative. They've been decorative all these years. So, but in any case, so I cleaned the because it would, in other words, the fireplace was actually ready to, you know, I could have started a fire and burned those logs, but I took them out and then I cleaned all the ashes out, which is a little bit of a job, but cleaned all that out and, you know, kind of vacuumed it, get all the, as much of the stuff up as I could, the dust, the ash dust. And so then these so-called electric logs, just which they sort of look like, you know, they're fairly convincing as far as looking like logs. They're made out of plastic, with their own, they come with their own grate. And so you just kind of put that thing in there. Of course, there's an electrical cord. And, fortunately, the electrical cord, I thought I may have to, find an extension cord so I could plug it in. However, the cord that came on it was actually kind of a long cord, and it was long enough I could actually come out of the fireplace with it. And then if you're looking at the image, go to the right. And there's some, kind of stuff in the way that's blocking the cord. And then behind that, in the far right of the image, there's a, kind of big recliner, or you can see about half of it. So I was able to plug the electric logs into the AC receptacle behind the chair. So that worked out fine. Didn't have to use any kind of an extension cord, and so that. But the little electric logs came with a little remote control, and so you can just turn that on and off. And so the fire effect is actually fairly realistic looking. It's actually fairly realistic looking, and because you got the depth behind it, it makes it look like the flames are, which they're obviously not flames, but it makes it look like, because you can see the firebox actually behind that. So, you have real depth to it. So it looks like what appear to be flames are actually, they're in an actual kind of 3D environment, more or less. Because there is depth, there's real depth behind them. So, but in any case, that's created by, kind of a plexiglass type material that's part of this electric logs. And so there's this plexiglass material that these apparent flames are sort of more or less projected onto. And then what creates the light are obviously LEDs, and so the LEDs are different colors, and they rotate. They're on, so they actually spin. So that's what creates the flame effect on the plexiglass. And then also internally, you've got there's some flickering, and you can change that if you want it to flicker or not. And the flickering actually kind of lights the whole thing up, and it makes it look more realistic, like it's actually an actual fire. So it's fairly convincing. And of course, there's also an electric heater that you can turn on or off. You can either turn that on or off. Just have the flame display by itself, which is nice because it's just the LEDs, and it's more or less, it's, a fireplace is a sort of focal point. Excuse me. And so you end up with, it's kind of like, it's really eye candy, and then plus, you can turn on some heat if you want to. And it, it puts out, a certain amount of heat, and it's basically, it's a 1500 watt ceramic heater is kind of integrated into this. And it's all kind of controlled, you know, by remote control. And but it is kind of mesmerizing to look at, you know, just to, you know, it is a bit of eye candy, to be, you know, perfectly honest. And so, but, you know, I was pretty, I'm pretty happy with that. I should have done that a long time ago, because otherwise that fireplace for more than... For more than 20 years, it just sat there with, not being used. And it was just, you know, kind of dead looking, and there was no fire to look at, or there was nothing to the focal point. So anyway, I got that and got that working, and I'm really happy with that. So, but that's the background image. You know, so it's kind of boring, but at the same time, if you're torturing yourself and you're watching this, instead of watching me, you can actually kind of fixate on the, because that's what I'm, you know, when I'm looking at my monitor right in front of me, and that's actually what I'm looking at, instead of looking at the camera like I should be, my eyes are attracted to the fake flames. So, but anyway, the other things I've done while I've been home, I've, you know, kind of made the rounds with different people as far as eating out, you know, kind of socializing, went to see a movie this afternoon with one of my friends. The movie, it's called Memory. It's Liam somebody is the actor. Kind of reminds me of Lloyd Bridges, if you ever remember who, you know, Lloyd Bridges. This guy sort of looks like him a little bit. But, so anyway, that's not a bad movie. You know, it's okay. So I saw that, and then we ate afterwards, and then I came on home, and, you know, so now it rained pretty hard, you know, especially when I was at the theater at one point, even over the sound system in the theater, which they had turned up pretty loud. At a couple of points towards the end of the movie, I heard really loud thunderclaps, and I thought, I don't think that was part of the soundtrack, and it wasn't. So when we got out of the movie, it was coming down pretty good. You know, and then it, you know, it passed. And I think it's supposed to do that again. I was looking at the radar a while ago, and it, you know, it kind of passed. So, but it looks like there's more, maybe more on the way before the night's over. So, oh well. It's, you know, in the spring, sometimes it tends to rain here quite a bit in the spring, and, you know, you just, that's the way it is. So, but at least with me up here on the hill, I never have to worry about it flooding. If it ever floods here, then there's going to be some severe problems elsewhere. Because I'm about, it's about 1,820 feet elevation out here at my house. And, you know, like down in the town, I think the elevation down in the little town that I'm close to is like 1,200 and something feet. So, you know, that's a lot of feet. if it ever floods here, they're in hundreds of feet of water, which I don't think that'll ever happen. So, anyway, let's see. What was I going to... I've been going to, you know, thinking about recording a podcast here for, you know, this past number of days, you know, sooner, because it's almost been a month since the last podcast. And I didn't, I don't know, there was a time or two where I could have, but then I didn't, you know, because it was just easier. Most of the time, you know, I did end up staying really busy. So, but as far as, you know, kind of what's been going on, I guess Elon Musk is, as far as I know, is buying Twitter. And of course, that sent a lot of people into a tizzy because, you know, Twitter, you know, they thought that was their stronghold, and I guess it was as far as, you know, only allowing thought to occur one way, you know, and stopping people from expressing any other sorts of thoughts, especially the more, you know, if effective people, stopping it, you know, kind of nipping it in the bud, and just the mere threat of Elon Musk, and it's more than a threat now, you know, kind of taking the place over, you know, they, you know, a lot of these people, these the ideological leftists just went insane. And, you know, so, oh well. You know, some of them, they've even self-canceled. They dropped themselves off of the service, and it, you know, before the sale actually even went through. You know, but you know, that kind of shows the mentality of these people. They, you know, it's really murder suicide. They want to destroy people. I mean, that's the purpose of evil. As I've often said, the purpose of evil is to destroy you. And, you know, people do end up acting as channels for something. And there is, you can't deny that there isn't, that evil doesn't exist. And it's not just, you know, you can say, oh, it's just the, you know, human nature or whatever. It does exist. And the other thing is, and I've said this over and over again, our thoughts are not our own. We think we're, you know, we love to think that we're, that we have our own thoughts, but, you know, I'm telling you, we don't. There really is nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. We do not have original thoughts. Absolutely do not. And it's, of course, it's really tough thing to try to admit, you know, to admit to oneself that, that you've acted out of someone else's suggestion. Even, you know, you can have it pointed out to you, and you can even kind of think of it yourself that, well, maybe I, you know, that I was being pressured. Well, why did I act the way I acted? Well, I wanted to. No, you did it because you were being pressured. You know, and I wanted to is just a rationalization. You know, so, but, you know, these people that, you know, they want to take down the society. There's people that, you know, they're the only distraction that that seems worthwhile to them is to destroy this, pull the society down, destroy it, make other people miserable. People, you know, make the people that achieve, tear them down, make them as miserable as you can. You know, and then, but that's basically, you know, kind of like murder suicide, because these people, you know, so if they can't have their way, then they'll just, I think they'll just end up doing themselves in. So, you know, I don't know. Just the idea is just stick with it, you know, be the best person you can be. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, us as individuals, you know, you know, I was thinking, you know, and we'll use it in the context of me. Am I ideologically possessed? Am I possessed by, you know, by ideas? And I would say, yes, I, you know, just out of, you know, matter of course, yes. To some one degree or another, I am. And sometimes, a lot of times, these are just popular ideas. These are just ideas that, you know, that are popular in society. And I can give you a couple of examples. You know, whenever I, you know, the big one is whenever I cut out the carbohydrates. You know, and that's been 3.5 years ago. And it's become really apparent to me that, you know, it's not just my own experience, but the experience of a bunch of other people that have cut out carbohydrates and are really experiencing major health improvements. You know, and reversal of diseases, various sorts of diseases in many cases. It's pretty obvious that, and if you know, that human beings, although we can eat carbohydrates, we shouldn't be. And so, you know, people are killing themselves with all the sweets. You know, we thinking, oh, I have to have sweet, I have to have this sweet, I have to have the potato, pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and all the cakes and cookies and candies and chocolate and God knows whatever else, ice cream. Got to have that stuff. Can't give it up. I was raised with it. It's normal. Can't give it up. And in the meantime, you know, more than 50% of people are they're either overweight. A lot of them, I'd say, probably at least, you know, maybe more than 50% of people at this point are obese. Some of those people are, there's a fairly substantial number of people that are morbidly obese. And then you have the people that are super morbidly obese that can just maybe barely waddle around. You know, but there's plenty, you know, I'd say, you know, obese and morbidly obese, you know, probably that easily makes up more than 50% of the population. And these people are slowly poisoning themselves. And yet they, you know, you can have very intelligent people. Otherwise, it seems, you know, they think I question things. I question this, question that. Maybe they can think rationally. But when it comes to food, they think, well, you know, I've heard some of these people say, oh, well, I'm eating healthy. I'm eating all these fruit and all this stuff. Well, of course, that's sugar. It's not good. There's nothing healthy about fruit. Just because it's been repeated over and over again that, oh, fruit's healthy, fruit's healthy. No, it's not. You're poisoning yourself with the sugar. You can get the nutrition, whatever nutrition's in fruit, you can easily get it elsewhere. You know, you're poisoning yourself with all the fructose. Oh, it's natural fructose. Well, so is chicken poop. Does that mean you're going to eat it? Chicken poop is 100% organic. Therefore, is a chicken poop healthy? I wouldn't eat it. I wouldn't advise it. You know, so just the so-called natural sugar is not, there's no advantage of that over, you know, anything that ends up converting to glucose in your bloodstream is the same damn thing. You know, there is no magic distinction. But there are people that, you know, they believe the cholesterol hypothesis. You know, these same people, oh, I should, you know, and you hear them talk and they're just repeating the ideological gibberish that they, you know, that we've all ended up repeating. I used to repeat it, used to think that way, or, you know, I really wasn't thinking. I was just kind of caught in the ideological trap with food. And, you know, once I got out of it, once I, you know, I escaped from it, I lost 40 pounds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You've heard me talk about it endlessly. There really is, people really are ideologically possessed when it comes to food. You know, so if that's the case, what else am I ideologically possessed with? What other things might there be? Because getting out of the ideological possession of just the food by itself, you know, so I'm eating the right, you know, I'm cutting out the carbohydrates. Just that by itself has made a radical improvement to my existence. Are there any other areas that could be radically improved? Of course, another one, you know, the one that came first is giving up resentment. And you've heard me talk about that rather endlessly for years. You know, and that people will defend the resentment. They think it's normal to resent. You know, human emotions are normal. You know, you've heard people say that. Oh, it's just normal to be emotional. It's normal to get angry. It's normal to shake your fist at the world or whatever it is. It's stupid. You become what you hate. You resent. You make yourself into a slave. Simple as that. So what other things? You know, I think it's a good idea to sort of be on the lookout for any potential ideological possession that might be, you know, that may still be lurking out there, you know, that may have its hooks in me and I don't even know it. You know, so I'm not discounting the possibility that there are ideological possessions, that, you know, that I am in some way, or maybe multiple ways, I'm still ideologically possessed. But at least not when it comes to something like resentment and not when it comes to something like food. So, but that's, knock that down. So that, you know, potentially you can make your own existence better by getting, recognizing ideological possession when recognizing it. And then if you can really recognize it, you can actually, that's how you get away from it. But you have to be willing to recognize it and not resent what you see. Okay, so I'm kind of going through some notes here that I made myself. Now, I made this note, people pay big money for perception-altering substances. Yeah, they do. And I guess a lot of states now are, kind of going ahead and they're legalizing the marijuana, which I think that's stupid. Now, of course, I've never used marijuana, never wanted to use marijuana. I think it's foolish to want the idea that you're going to alter your perception. Because, like I said, it doesn't have to be marijuana. It can be food. That's what people, what do you think people are doing with food? With the taste of ice cream and chocolate and all of the taste, what do you think people are doing with it? They're altering their perceptions. Oh, it makes them feel good, like they're feeling like they're God, essentially. You know, so. Let's see here. Okay, let's keep going. I'm kind of still. Looking through here. This makes it for a really interesting audio, doesn't it? what sort of moral authority does a country have that is trying to mess with a gender, with gender and sexuality of preschoolers? Ask yourself that question. What kind of moral authority does a country have that is trying to, you know, see, they're trying to mess, they're trying to alter, actually, you know, the perceptions of children, mess with their gender, mess with their sexual, you know, and introduce them to sexuality, alter their perceptions is what, that's really actually the goal. What kind of country does that? And what kind of parents allow that to happen? If a parent sends their kid to public school, do they really love them? I don't think they do. I don't think they do. I think they don't. That's all pretty obvious because, I mean, we see what's going on. Well, I can't afford to, you know, to do the homeschooling. I can't afford to not send my, or, you know, to do private school. Well, why'd you have kids? Why did you have kids? Why would you send your children to public school? You know, and then of course another excuse, well, I had to go to public school, so that, you know, they'll have to. But you see what they're doing. You know, they're trying to sexualize them and twist them and, you know, give them physical hormones that, permanently alter their bodies. You know, or even irreversible medical procedures. It's insanity. Utter insanity. Why would you send your kid to a public school? You know, that's just utterly insane. What kind of country has a, you know, has any kind of moral authority in the world that does something like that? That brings up another point. One of the most important functions a parent, and I, you know, I love to disarm myself. I'm not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent. But knowing what I know, I have an opinion about it. One of the most important functions a parent has is to as much as possible, be an environment for their children that helps them, the child, you know, put them in an environment, into a situation that helps them to the maximum extent possible find their own meaning in existence, you know, for the meaning of their own existence. So in other words, you know, you want, you as the parent, you're sort of the environment for the child. Think of it that way. You're the environment. So you want to be, you know, as good of an environment, as good of an environment as possible to, but your job, among other things, is, you know, one of the main primary tasks is to put your child in such a position that he or she has the maximum chance possible of being able to discover, generate, find a meaningful existence. their own meaningful existence, not your meaningful existence, not your idea, but their own idea. You know, of course, you want to teach them how to work, and you want to teach them the value of work and the value of being friends with their conscience. Of course, that's part of being friends with your conscience really is part of being able to find meaning, because you're not going to find any kind of meaning in your existence if you're enemies with your conscience, and the chances of you finding meaning and meaningful existence are pretty much nil. I'd say your primary job as a parent is to put your child in a position where they have the maximum likelihood of being able to find a meaningful existence for themselves. That really is your function as a parent. The only other thing that I made a little note about, how do we reverse the moral decline? How do we do that? That's a tough one. You know, and I think it can only be done one person at a time. Well, I know it can only be done one person at a time, but how do you do that? Is it something you can just, I'm going to put this message out here on Facebook, and then all of a sudden it's just going to reverse the moral decline? It doesn't work that way. The only person that you can really affect, that you really have any effect over, is yourself. That's where the maximum impact is with yourself. And that means making friends with your own conscience. And if you can genuinely make friends with your own conscience, which that also entails finding and giving up ideological possessions, if you can do that, then maybe you stand a chance of positively influencing other people, being a positive influence. But you can't. As long as you're part of the problem, then what effect would you have? You won't have any effect. Or maybe even a negative effect. Because you're simply part of the disease, part of the contagion. But it really is necessary, I think, to give up. You want to be an effective person. You have to give up. You have to, you know, have the attitude, I'm going to make friends with my conscience. But then you also have to have the attitude, I want to see where I'm wrong. I want to see where I'm ideologically possessed. And, of course, ideological possession revolves in large part around value systems. And if you're enemies with your conscience, as I said before, forget about having the right value system, because you don't. Can't have. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but in order to have the proper value system, you must be friends with your conscience. And not just lip service friends. You've really got to be friends with your conscience. Then you have the right value system. Then at that point, you stand a chance of letting go of ideological possession, or various degrees of ideological possession. So, anyway, let's see. We've been going about 45 minutes. I think I'm going to bring this to a close. So, yep, like I say, back to work on Wednesday. And then, you know, nose back to the grindstone so I can make some more money so that I can spend some more money. So, and save more money. I'm also saving money as well. And it's, you know, I don't know. This inflation thing is, I'm in obviously a pretty good position, but personally, as I've known something like this could happen for a long time. And, you know, I've seen these problems. If you've listened to me any length of time, I've seen these problems coming from a long way off. For years, I've seen these problems marching forward. And, you know, they're here. And, you know, now people are seeing them and, you know, kind of getting a rude awakening, and they're beginning to realize that they were living in a dream world, and it's, you know, rude awakenings can be quite painful, I think. So personally, I'm in a, you know, I think I'm in a pretty good position to, you know, I will survive whatever it is, but there's a lot of people that are in a big world of hurt, you know, so I just have to, you know, see how that goes. You know, and they may, you know, see the problem. If you're ideologically possessed, you may think that, you know, you can live in the ideological possession for some period of time, but sooner or later, reality has a way of catching up. It always does. Reality always catches up, and so all of a sudden, then, you know, you can be right, you know, living right in your ideological possession, and then all of a sudden something happens because your ideological possession is not a good representation. It's not an accurate representation of reality. And reality suddenly kind of catches up, and then, you know, reality has a way sometimes of smacking us upside the head with the two before. You know, so but I think there's a lot of people that, you know, that have been kind of living, like I say, they've sort of been living in some sort of fantasy world, and the fantasy world has kind of come crashing down, and the crashes are still in the process of coming down, so. Anyhow, I think I'm going to cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later. Let's see here.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.